Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya Allison, and I will be your host. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for our guest today, Neil Schaefer. All right, Neil, thank you so much for joining us for Grin Gets Real. I'm very excited to have you on here as our guest. As a huge fan of your book, The Age of Influence, I can't highly recommend it enough.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really, the honor I think is mine. Grin is obviously a leader in the world of influencer marketing technology. And as I mentioned before, Katya, when you reach out to me, one of my dear clients uses your technology. I've seen it firsthand, and I know how much of an impact it's had on their influencer marketing program. So thank you for being innovative in the space. I'm a digital and social media marketing, author, speaker, consultant. I teach at a few universities around the world, and I've written 4 books now. My first book was published back in 2009. So as the industry has matured, hopefully so have my books. And it was really, a few years ago, and I distinctly remember being a guest speaker at USC in a marketing class for an MBA program. And at that time, boy, it was back in 2017, I believe, the questions that I would normally get asked from, and these are students, but they're professionals, they're working full-time and then taking this program in the evening, what have you, were questions around, marketing technology, about social media ROI, social media marketing strategy. And this is the first time that I was not only getting asked questions about influencer marketing, but all these marketers were wondering how they could also become more influential themselves. And that was sort of the tipping point as I sort of tuned into influencers and influencer marketing. After that, I was getting asked more. And as I started to, do a deep dive into sort of case studies and how companies were leveraging influencers, I realized that the concept of digital influence was nothing new and that many companies were already doing it without them even knowing it. So for me, the book was a journey to uncover this potential. And I realized that marketers and entrepreneurs and really the industry, I believe if they wanted to get the most out of influencer marketing, we almost had to start with redefining what is digital influence and the many ways that we can collaborate with influencers. So, since publishing the book, really right when lockdown started here in California in March of 2020, I've done my best really to get the word out to hopefully not just help the industry, but to help businesses. Influencer marketing is the biggest untapped potential in anything you can do in digital marketing, regardless of what industry you're in.
Absolutely. And I really like what you said at, defining digital influence. I always like to ask everybody this question. It seems like such a basic question, but hearing the responses and the different answers from it really, it identifies kind of the gaps and why people don't realize that they've been doing it. So how would you define what an influencer is?
Influencers at the heart of it are content creators that have built a community in social media. Now, is a podcast social media? It's not like a Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, but podcasters are also influencers. These are people that have mastered content creation and have mastered the ability to engage with people that don't know them and to build community, to build fans. Now, I think where things got started with influencer marketing was it was just based on number of followers. And what happens when you start to do that, and I know many people have said, well, I'm a photographer. I wanted to get into an influencer platform. I needed 10,000 followers to be considered. So I just bought fake followers to get to 10,000. Now we're to the point where it doesn't require a lot of followers to have impact. Even micro influencers at 10,000 followers, which is a lot of followers. There's a lot of people out there that have created various types of content that have created these communities of over 1,000 followers in any given social network, right? And that's really where, I don't think an influencer has to be paid to become an influencer. I don't think an influencer needs to have 100,000 followers to be an influencer, but they've been constantly creating content around a subject and they've been able to build a community around that, no matter how large or small.
Now, I will say that we do have a lot of people that want to start with influencer marketing, and they do still look at the follower count rather than like the engagement rate. They're always looking for this very specific metric. In your book, you really dive into how that lends towards transactional versus a relationship with your influencer. If you could share a little bit about that difference between transactional and relationship, what does that mean for influencer marketing?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny, Katya. I'm signed up to a bunch of marketplaces myself, so I get pitches, right? and recently, the question I've seen in a lot of pitches, which didn't appear until this year, is, are you a current user of our product?
Oh, that's perfect.
When you are treating someone as a programmable ad because they have a lot of followers, and you don't even ask them if they're your customer, and you assume they have this influence based on the number of followers, and I'm sure you've hopefully vetted them to make sure that your product is actually relevant, because there are people that will take your money even if the content's irrelevant, right?
Absolutely.
That's where it's transactional. That's and that's where I think the industry began, is seeing people as programmable ad units and throwing money at them, chasing the fact that they're going to get X number of impressions, even though it might be to a completely irrelevant audience. And if that person has never heard of your brand or doesn't use your product, it tends to be transactional. I mean, we talk a lot about authenticity, right?
Yes.
I don't want to flog a dead horse here, but if they haven't used your product, it's not going to be authentic, period. You want people to talk about you without your having to ask them. That's the long-term ROI. And it does happen when you build passionate fans, when you build passionate brand advocates that have influence. And you miss out on that in the one-time transaction, because the person that you're dealing with who's taking the one-time transaction, even though they may never use your product, they're, you know, talking with you today and they're moving on to someone else tomorrow. And you're never going to get that benefit. And it's going to show to be a little bit less authentic than if they were a user. And it also, you know, the people following, they can read through that as well. So on paper, it looks great. But in reality, you really miss out on the potential. And you might do okay. You might get some brand awareness. You might get some, you know, some dark social visits to your website. It might work out. But I just think you have a much better chance if you focus in the long term, a collaborative spirit, and hopefully you find people that actually have tried your product before, or if they haven't, start with shipping them some free product to get their feedback and go from there.
No, you make a really good point. Now, you did just break down like long-term and short-term is very transactional. In your opinion, is there a use case for those short-term transactional relationships with influencers? Is it ideal for like someone who wants like quick content, or maybe it's, you know, just to figure out what works, what doesn't? Like in your research and your experience, is there a time and place to use transactional short-term influencer relationships?
You got to look at content in terms of like a stock portfolio. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have your short-term, your mid-term, your long-term. And your short-term is going to be the ads, right? There's no long-term ROI, but if you just need to make a bang, it's going to be really expensive, but it's possible to generate some buzz with that, right? Whether that lasts or not is another story. Yeah. And I think that transactional approach to influence marketing is the same way. There is a play for short-term. It's going to be very expensive, but if you want, you know, 40 people that are influential in yoga to talk about your new yoga pants because you're going to compete with Lululemon, uh-huh, and you just want to get massive apparent brand awareness, whether it's real or not is another story. It depends on the realness of the influence and their followers.
Yeah.
And you want 40 of them to talk about you on the same day, so that when people do a hashtag search or they follow any one of the influencers, that your product shows up. Yes, there definitely is a role for that, especially if you're a newcomer, new product, you want to make a splash and you're willing to spend a lot of money to do that. I'd say, yeah, there definitely is a role, just from a very tactical perspective, from that short term. Maybe that big buzz that you generate is, you know, carries you over and generates enough sales that you see the ROI. And, you know, Katya, with all of this, it's all about experimenting, right?
Yes.
So don't take Katya's word or Grin's word for it. Don't take my word for it. You need your own data. And I think influencer marketing, the more data you have, the more experience you have, like anything else, the better you get at it, the more realistic your outcomes become, the more you understand market pricing and market dynamics with different influencers. So I would try both approaches.
You have continued to say the ROI of influencer marketing. What is the ROI stand for when you're talking about it? And the reason that I am asking this for some context is because I think that a lot of people associate ROI with just direct sales, direct revenue. Do you see ROI as something different, something bigger when it comes to influencer marketing?
You know, ROI is return on investment. ROI can mean a lot of different things because marketing is a funnel. If people don't know about you, if they don't know, like, and trust you, they're not going to buy from you. So depending on where the public is in your funnel, it's going to require an investment. And the ROI ideally comes in the sale, but until you get to the sale, there's other steps they need to take. And smart marketers are measuring their investments for each one of those steps. So brand awareness, you know, getting massive brand awareness for a marketing campaign, and, you know, with the KPI, whatever KPI you want to use, that is ROI. The general commonality to all of this is that you're measuring it, right? You're doing it with purpose. You're measuring. You're not just throwing money at influencers, but you have a plan and a strategy. And if you get to this number, this KPI, this measurement, then it's a success. Because if you can do that, you now have some benchmark figures. You can now say, okay, how do I improve upon this? Now you begin to see the success or failure of campaigns going forward. You learn from that. And that's where, you know, the name of my company is PDCA, Plan, Do, Check, Action. It's all this never-ending Kaizen circle of optimization. That's how you get better and better with your marketing and that ROI over time. So don't get lost and just think it's a sale, because it's not that easy. If it was that easy, you know, everybody would be doing this, right? But
exactly.
It takes money to make money, and it's not always a direct route. And that's where the way you measure is important. But it all has to, you know, it's all somewhere in the funnel, right? But you know, you're going to have different KPIs for different stages, and it's all part of what I would say is ROI.
With the state of kind of where we're at, especially in this pandemic, with so many more people on social media now, do you think that brands would be kind of missing the boat if they don't jump on really figuring out how they can leverage influencers or create an influencer program for their brand?
Absolutely. I think most companies that have invested in influencer marketing probably have that mindset. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of newcomers now with coronavirus. There's no other way to engage with your customer. Now, the only way to meet your clients digitally is where they're at. And it's either search, it's email, or it's social. We won't talk about the search and email, and there is a way that influencers can help with there. But with the social part, I listen to a lot of podcasts about Instagram marketing.
Yeah.
And where all these podcasts used to talk about the high engagement, they're now saying the same thing about Instagram algorithm changes that we talked about with Facebook like 5-6 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And now people that are used to gaining a lot of engagement organically are starting to struggle a little. And it's going to happen even with TikTok. And I know you can get some crazy engagement numbers there. It happens with every social network. It's supply demand. And the algorithms are, you know, people are always going to outperform brands. So if you want to remain relevant in social, just having an organic brand presence alone is not going to allow you to do that because the way the algorithms work. Now, you can try to solve the problem by throwing a lot of ad money at it, which a lot of brands do. But as, you know, one of my millennial marketers at one of my clients would say, the ads sort of cheapen our brand image. And people also distrust ads. Why do you need to advertise? So, you know, every generation views ads a little bit differently. I would rather you put that ad money into influencer collaborations. And I would love to see you build a program where all of your social media marketing, all of your organic social, it's all influencer generated content. You do not create any of your own organic social media content. It all comes from influencers, and you let the influencers do the talking for you, because not only are they going to create better content than you can, right? Mm-hmm. But they know how the algorithms work. They know how to get engagement. They get it. That's what they do. That's how they built their influence. And I believe that the successful companies will realize that social is out of their control. It never was in their control.
Yeah.
And really, I see an organic social media marketing. Yes, there's a need now and then to have your own content. I get that from a credibility, and you have new products, what have you. But I would try to do as close to a 100% influencer-generated content organic social approach. And in order to get there, you need to collaborate with influencers, right? And that's where you get these other benefits of having this sort of long-term program. So I believe that companies that don't collaborate with influencers are going to be spending more and more money on paid social and it becomes less and less effective over time.
Do you think it lends better for D2C brands over like B2B? Like, is there an industry where it makes more sense and less sense? Or is it just the different type of influencer for those particular types of brands and businesses?
You know, one of the things people miss out with influencers is if they are influential in your industry, they know all the players in the industry. They know the needs. They know the types of things that people talk about and engage with. It's almost like your own focus group if you can build a program for influencers, right? And therefore, you know, that's where you're going to get that feedback that's really going to help you develop new product and ideas, what have you. So, you know, direct to consumer, obviously that's going to be an area where you can leverage influencers. B2C, you need to understand consumers anyway. But the interesting thing is I was on a podcast with Jay Baer talking about B2B. And when you think about B2B, with B2C, you know, everybody's their own decision maker, right?
Yeah.
But with B2B, it gets a little bit more narrow. And it's not one person that makes the decision on whether or not to buy your product or service. Yeah. You need to go through a corporation. You need to go through many people. And the fact that there's multiple decision makers, and yet there's fewer and fewer influencers, fewer and fewer content creators that are talking about that niche subject, I almost begin to think that influencer marketing might even be more important for B2B because of that scarcity. Oh, and by the way, sort of like trust in a company is even more important, because you might lose your job if you choose the right company. But you know what? If you choose the wrong hair conditioner, you throw out the remainder and you spend a few bucks and buy a new one, right? So the paradigm is very different. I truly believe, regardless of industry, I don't think it's any more important or less important. One may say for B2B, it's more important, but I think it's equally important for all these industries. And hopefully people listening found, you know, their own silo. Even government officials, you know, I'm surprised in the election. I know that when Giuliani, I think he used Tribe, one of your competitors, like a marketplace to try to get people to, and it sort of failed because it didn't seem authentic, right? And people
could see through it. Yeah, it's not genuine, not authentic, absolutely.
Why wouldn't he have tapped into his own fan base and find the influencers and collaborate with them, right? And it just, it kills me that more and more politicians don't do that. I know we're sort of talking about the election now, but so regardless, it's, you know, it's about tapping into your fan base, not just that one-time transactional. And it works regardless of industry, in all honesty. I don't want to say it's more or less important, but, you know, for those that don't think it's relevant for B2B, I'd say really open your eyes and it's even more relevant.
I think that you're right. For B2B, it is kind of untapped, right? It is your customers. I do want to touch on, because you articulate this so well in your book and about finding the right influencers. I think it's one of the biggest challenges that we run into. It's certainly one of like the top three, if not the top challenge for anybody who's engaging with or has an influencer marketing program. When you're looking for the right influencers, in your book, you dive into like these tiers that you attack first before diving into the unknown. Could you cover a little bit about like how to find that right influencer?
If you want people to talk about you in social, you want to collaborate with people that already know, like, and trust your brand.
Yeah.
And because the level of influence necessary to be considered an influencer has become lower over time, you know, with a nano influencer, there's probably a lot of people that already know, like, and trust your brand that we would consider influential on a given social network. If you have distributors, resellers, I mean, it depends on your industry, but if there are marketing partners out there and they have influence in social media, or people that work for them do, it's also in their best interest that you succeed, and therefore you might be able to find people. But I think where it gets powerful is when you go to your customers.
Yes.
And it's funny, just, you know, my business banks with Bank of America. And just like last month, I got this, you're invited to the Bank of America Advisory Council. I'm like, huh, Bank of America doing influencer marketing. But then, and I don't want to bash Bank of America, but when I log in, it just wasn't engaging the way they had it structured. I can see that someone was happy that they had a lot of people joining it, but there was no incentive for me to log back in to this private form that they had created, or the questions they were asking, or anyway. So, you know, it's easy to invite customers into something, but it's a lot harder to actually activate them unless you treat them like an influencer. That same mindset when you wanted to reach out to that someone with a million or 2 million followers on TikTok or on Instagram, if you had that same mindset when you engage with your customers. And I'm not saying you need to engage with all of them. You know, there is technology that allows you to find social media profiles from an email address. And with a little, you know, data analysis, you can find the influencers among your customers. And you might be surprised. That same company that uses Grin, we used a tool to try to find influencers in their customer database. There were some verified profiles on Instagram with, you know, six-figure followers that were following. They were customers of the brand, and they didn't even realize it. And they were challenged to find influencers like many other companies. When you reach out to random people, you know, the law of average says only 3% are going to respond. And I think a lot of companies freak out when they send out 100 DMs and only three people respond. That's sort of the average in marketing. But when you reach out to people that are already your customers, obviously it's a whole different paradigm, right? They already use your product. They already love your product. They might already have pictures of using your product. They love to try out a new product. They love to help you. It just makes it a lot easier, and the end product is a lot better. And then, you know, that's sort of the top tier, really dominated by employees. But then there's another tier, which is your followers, right? Maybe they've used your product, maybe they haven't, but the fact that they're following you means there's some like, no interest there.
Yeah.
And then there's others. You know, I think the data says that, the stat says 97% of people that talk about your brand on Twitter do not tag your brand. They don't use the username.
Yeah.
They just use the brand name or the product name. So if you're not using the social listening tool, you missed out. And now social listening tools have visual recognition, so that people may have talked about your brand on Instagram, but they didn't tag you. They didn't use a hashtag, yet your logo's in the photo, right?
Yeah.
And those are other people that it obvious that you want to reach out to. So the funny thing, Katya, is people start with the exact opposite, with people
I was just going to say that.
Right? And maybe they hate your brand. Maybe they had a negative experience. Or, you know, if they've never heard of you, it's going to be a harder sell, right? Because these are people. So I believe, you know, if you started with those people, I think there's so much value in terms of influencer-generated content, in terms of user focus group. There's so much value you can derive there. That may be enough for your program. And if it's not enough, then why don't you use those people to refer new people into your program rather than reach out to people you don't know? So, you know, I know that Grin has been sort of tooting the same horn, absolutely, and I've been talking about this. And I think the fact that brands are starting to ask, are you a current user of your product in these influencer pitches? I do think we're definitely moving in that direction. But, you know, for those that are new to influencer marketing that are listening, that is absolutely the direction I'd start. And if you've been doing it, that's the direction that I would transition into.
Yeah. And it is most definitely the direction that our philosophy is based on, right? Like, why we've developed Grin is because, one, you know, we definitely believe that it is about the long-term relationships that provide exactly what you're talking about, provide the focus groups, you know, identify those that already have that natural brand affinity for you so that you can get that authentic content to like squeeze out as much value from that relationship as possible, and not in a callous way. I think that if you are connected with someone that has a brand affinity, right? Everyone wants everyone to do well. I want my customers to be shouting on the rooftops about Grin, and they just love the fact that we're just so engaged with them and their success. Like, it's definitely mutually beneficial. Now, you have talked about, you know, like I said, the long term, what an influencer is, you know, finding the right influencer. And you even mentioned a touch on TikTok, which makes me think, like, all right, in your opinion, especially since you're probably thinking about your other book already, where do you see the trend of influencer marketing? Where do you see it trending for like next year? What do you have a prediction for what we can anticipate from influencer marketing?
I think everything that we've been talking about, Katya, is still pretty new and revolutionary to most businesses. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, obviously one trend. You know, I think that, you know, the emergence of visual social, and it was one of the chapters in The Age of Influence, really challenged brands. They just can't participate. I think TikTok, once again, is a reminder that it is really hard for brands to be able to create that type of content that people would engage with. So I think that TikTok is a network that brands are naturally going to become even more reliant on influencers with, similar to when Snapchat emerged and the beginning of stories. You know, the way that we do stories in Instagram is not like it was originally done in Snapchat, where they were truly stories. Several frames led to one conclusion. So I do think that, you know, TikTok brings upon the need, especially for B2C brands, to be doing more. But I also think that for B2B brands that are listening, you know, it's funny, you know, coronavirus has affected many things and it's really affected marketing budgets.
Yeah.
It's affected marketing budgets in that there's probably a lot of excess budget right now, because probably what happened after coronavirus is you just put a pause on your ads, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you put a pause on your influencer programs. But now as you go back, at the end of the day, you still need to get, you know, you need to get sales. You need to get people to your website. You need to get leads. And we've seen a lot of companies, especially in B2B, that would use events as a way to get leads, are now looking at leveraging influencers for, whether it's for virtual events or for, you know, podcasts like we're doing now, or blog posts, what have you. We've seen an immense shift in that direction. So I think that, you know, with coronavirus, and I think the original knee-jerk reaction was, oh, influencers are now going to be bankrupt because of coronavirus. And yes, if you were a travel influencer, certainly you felt the impact and you need to pivot, right? But for most other influencers, I think it's business as usual. And I do believe when you're talking about humanizing your brand, there's no better way to do it than through the voice and face of someone that you trust, which is an influencer, right? So I do think it's accelerated that need. And that's, you know, I don't think there's going to be any brand new trend other than we're going to see more and more investment into TikTok for sure, sort of taking away some of Instagram's market share. We're going to see more companies developing these long-term, call them brand ambassador programs. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they're going to merge sort of employee advocacy programs into those is another thing I'm seeing. And definitely we're just going to see more and more B2B investment in influencer marketing as well.
That's perfect. And a great way to just kind of wrap it up. Thank you again, Neil, so much for being our guest today. I truly appreciate you taking time just to kind of talk with us about influencer marketing and everything in between.
Well, Katya, I want to thank you. Early on when I was writing The Age of Influence, I reached out to a number of influencer marketing companies asking if they had any case studies that I could feature in the books. There's like dozens in the book. And there was one company that the CEOs, you know, it was a very snidely remark, like, who are you? I've never heard of you. And I sort of shook it off. But, you know, to be here with, like I said, one of the industry leaders, it really means a lot to me. And it also validates the ideas that I have. So I want to thank you for really making my day personally and professionally. And yeah, I'm just excited to hear what people think of this episode, and hopefully it pushes businesses in a positive direction.
That's definitely the goal. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thank you.
In this week's episode, I chat with Neil about the evolution of influencer marketing from being transactional to relationship, and how long-term relationships with influencers can mean a better return on investment. We also discuss the trends and dive into how to tackle one of the biggest challenges when it comes to an influencer marketing program: finding the right influencers. So be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes on Apple or Spotify, or visit our website at grin.co for more information on Grin. Until next time, keep grinning.